Hello, everyone. Banged Up, episode 3, season 2. How are you guys?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm feeling good.
I'm good too, Claire. Thank you, mate. Hi, morning.
It was an all-inclusive. If you didn't feel like...
it was all-inclusive,
like,
to be fair.
You know, if Boats jumps in there before you, then that's what you get.
Classic Boats, that.
Classic Boats, yeah. We're not going to hear from Boats in this episode, are we?
Technical issues.
Technical issues.
Technically, he couldn't be asked to come.
No, wasn't this the day my Wi-Fi was acting up?
Yeah, this was. No, or we couldn't connect your microphone or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was genuine technical issues.
It was genuine.
Yeah, but then the effort was made.
I was devo, to be fair, because just after it, Rob just messaged me. He just WhatsApped me saying, "Oh, we'll just do it without you." When I remember there was a time when he couldn't sort out his earphones.
I remember that too.
Do you remember
actually?
That he couldn't sort out his earphones,
getting,
and then we had to reschedule.
Really stitched up.
That's poor from him.
And not only did we have to reschedule Boats, we lost our guests completely. They went off.
Exactly.
They went off the radar after that.
Who was one of my guests? Who obviously I put in a lot of input. So as.
So much for treat others as you'd like to be treated yourself, eh, Rob?
Exactly.
I'm glad you remembered that, Rob Boats.
Exactly.
But we haven't held it against him too much.
That's all good. It's all good.
Who's been enjoying their coffee this week?
Rob has.
I really have. I don't even have. I've been on the Comal this week, which is a premium one. It's a few quid extra, but trust me, it's worth it.
A few quid extra? Oh, for the bag.
Yeah, a few quid extra
for
the bag, yeah.
Not
so
each
I go,
coffee.
I wander down the road to their Islington Cafe. I get Leo, the lovely man that runs it there, to grind it up for me for my French press. It's delicious. I really enjoy it. I'm not going to lie, I really enjoy it. I'm not the only one that's been enjoying it. I'm just looking at the reviews on Apple here. I'm not the only one that's been enjoying Redemption Roasters coffee. Just listen to Simo Fishnut on our reviews. Brilliant to have you guys back. Interesting, funny, and on occasion a bit sad. A fantastic listen. Not my words, the words of Simo Fishnut. Oh, and I've just ordered my coffee from Redemption Roasters. So yeah, remember, Banged Up 25 is the code that you use to get 25% off your order, both in-store and online.
So for the episode that I got pied on, who have we got?
Well, quite the lady you missed out on, actually, Boats. Her name is Nives. She describes herself as an international madam. She grew up in Switzerland, moved to the States to pursue the American dream of making some money. And Rob, actually, you tell us how we got in contact with her. You've got a good story.
Yeah, so this is the one we kind of put out the call on Instagram, didn't we, for anyone that we kind of... looking for people to chat to, and we put up the bat signal, and Nives reached out. She dropped us quite a long message to start with and kind of outlined her story. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it, so I arranged a call with her to kind of feel her out and see how that went. And I probably didn't mention that I was going to FaceTime her or do like a Zoom call, which she wasn't expecting. So I kind of rang her. She was outside, I think, like a beauty
salon.
It's quite
bold, Rob, to FaceTime a stranger.
Well, yeah, no, I guess in the context of that, I completely appreciate that. But I guess in my head, I was like, well, we're going to be doing a Zoom call for the show. So I figured that was just, I just had not done a good job of explaining that. Anyway, caught her a bit off guard. And so she was like, she picked up the phone like, oh, I didn't know you were going to FaceTime me. That's a terrible impression of her, but there's this weird Swiss New York accent going on that you'll hear. You judge for yourself if that was a good impression. Anyway, within 2 minutes, I had not stopped laughing for starters at just like how she was kind of explaining her background. She was like on the go. She was like talking to people and talking to me. She was just absolute gold. And I remember just coming off, I was chatting to her for about 5 to 10 minutes. And just came off that call and was like, we absolutely have to get this lady on. I just thought, yeah, she was absolute dynamite. So yeah, I think that comes across fairly well in the episode, in the interview.
I think, Boats, it wasn't the episode for you to join in on anyway, because Nives and Rob were having a competition who can talk the most.
Oh, is it? It was one of them ones.
Nives won in this episode, but I think between the two of them,
I wouldn't have got a word in edgeways. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't anyway, do I?
I was about to say, you're not going to hear Boats for the next half an hour, which is about 5 minutes longer than normal. So
the public want more. That's what they're saying, Boats. So
I'll give them more. I'll give them more give in them due more. Time.
Well, she is back in Switzerland now, having been banned from the States after receiving a sentence there and spending some time in prison in New York, including Rikers Island. So we'll hear about that. And we pick up the story when she got her first job over in New York.
I worked at a strip club, a gentleman's club. It was like high-end, a lot of rules behind it. And I made just some money to survive in that time to figure out where I'm going to go, if I'm going to visa. So it was like 3 months. In that time, I learned a lot of English. I met a lot of people because I've always been pretty open to meet people or meeting basically the right people. And from there, I met some really good friends that I'm friends with today, actually. And I kind of had a friend that was studying. And while she was studying, she had she knew about marketing, online marketing. And she showed me how she had girls on Backpage. Now, Backpage is like not really an amazing page. It's like more like lower class of like advertisement for girls. And I figured, you know what? I'm going to make this a high class situation. And there were some situations that, you know, with the girls, I don't know, from Switzerland, with apartments that I could bring in the girls to the United States legally with a tourist visa. They could stay for a little bit. And I had the advertisement. And then I went out networking, you know, going to the golf club, to the country club, to all the places you have to go and just meet the right people. And, of course, referring them the right girls.
When you say girls, is that like kind of like strippers or...
No, at this moment, we talk about escort girls.
Okay.
Really a high-end way. So now this is a little bit, in the States, it's a little bit funny. So it's there. People know it's there, but it's illegal. Now, okay. You're not going to chase really after the high-end girls because you're not going to be in the streets with pimps and whatever. They go more after like girls, they're like in the streets and have pimps and it's just like an illegal thing. Now, again, it's illegal, but you're not going to advertise that. So as a lady, as an escort lady, they would advertise, you know, basically we have dinner together. And there's like a compensation for that. And that's the way I advertise them as well. But there is kind of like a knowledge between each other that, okay, there could be more, but it's on their own terms. You would say it, you know, but it's a big business out there because you have, you know, all these people, it's New York City. So you have a lot of people coming in and out, business people, Wall Street, politicians, entertainment. So they all want to have a good time.
I'm intrigued at this point, at which point you decided to hit the golf courses and start networking.
That's the place to be.
So you were just like, right, let's go and find these kind of high-end clients. And
the thing is, if you do online advertisement, of course, you can find some good clients, but the way is the word of mouth, as we say. When I met someone, I met one guy particularly, and he was like, you know what, cool. He introduced me to like 20 other guys. These guys introduced me to another 40 guys. And then it's like, you know what? She's trustworthy. The girls look exactly like the picture. They're on time. Because you know how Swiss people are with the time. I was on time, on time ready. And I would stress them about that. And then they say, you know what? It's kind of trust is building up. You know what? My friend had a good experience. None of my girls would ever rob somebody or do something weird. If that ever happened, the money will come from my pocket and I'll give it back to you. To be honest, I know how to manipulate a little bit, which you have to. Not even you can't say in a positive way, but in a way of like, you know what? If we work together, make sure you don't do certain things as a female, you know, so that would kind of work out.
So how long were you running that for before things went sour?
4 years.
4 years. All right. Okay.
And if I think back, it was... Time didn't go fast. Like I really built it up. I saw like after like 8-9 months, I saw, you know what, me going out, meeting all these people, having good services, I can build it up to about, I had up to 50 girls at one point. Having 50 girls, it's not that they work for you all day and night, but I had it all over 4 continents. So it's like, if there's someone calling over there and there and there, we could set it up. I just had a way of like getting things done, even with the financials. You know, it was before Obama came in and ruined everything with my plan. It was kind of cool, like the friendship we built and girls would make money, introduce other girls. No one ever owed me money. Like there was never an issue with these kind of things. So, and for me, it was important that it's girls of, I mean, I say quality anyway, but I say a girl that says, you know what, I'm studying right now. I need to make some money. Or I want to open this business. I want to buy a house. Let me do this for 1-2 years. I'll be good at it and I'm out. That's like the way to go. But not everyone has that mindset, you know. But it's like the goal, definitely.
Did your friends and, you know, anyone that wasn't involved in the business, did they know what you did? Or was that something that you had to keep covered up?
I would tell them a little bit, not too much, because I don't want them to be involved. But to be honest, most of my friends they were either involved. And the ones who wasn't involved, they were like, you know what, just keep it away from me, which I respect. I would never bring them into something. So if you don't know anything about it and I'm not going to be around with anything that could bring you into danger, you know, it's I don't feel like I was hurting them.
Can we ask how much you were earning roughly at this time?
So, of course, when I started first, I wasn't at my top. I would say on my top, I make 50, 60,000 a month.
Right.
21, 22. But I always understand, like, these costs of apartments, drivers, and I was a little bit like living over my means as well. Like, mm-hmm. I had to drive with a Maybach. You know what I mean? Like, my rent was $3,100 per apartment. It was not even that nice. It's just New York City. You're in the middle of the... And I think London is the same thing. I stayed one Notting Hill. They charged me a whole lot of money for the apartment. But
I think you'd get by on 60 grand a month, though. I think you'd be all right. You'd find somewhere.
So tell us, come on, I'm ready for it now. Tell us how it went wrong.
So at one point, I would say, like I said, I was pretty much... Everything was going really good. Like, the people I get to know, like, really the top end people. I get invited to places where I never dreamed of being. Now, what I want to say is, in my book, I kept the name secret. Reason is that those are still my friends. I don't want to bring them into a situation as well. And then I had this really good friend. And this is the one name I do name in the book. Because there was, like, basically the guy that's an informant. We call it rat snitch. I don't know.
Any other above. Yeah.
And he was like a brother to me, and he's like the right-hand man, former head of security of Bad Boy. P. Diddy was involved. I mean, he wasn't involved, P. Diddy, but he was like the head of security of him. And of course, through him, I had a lot of connections, right? I mean, I got to the parties. I could, you know, I would take care of everyone in every kind of way. And he would look out for me. And at one point, he just asked me to do a favor. And their favor was basically to hook up a new connect. To go back real quick, when I had the escort service, I never dealt with drugs because I had someone to, you know, they look out for themselves. But when guys are high, especially, let's say, Wall Street, you make a ton of more money. So if a guy is not high, it's like 1 hour, it's done. Then it's 10 hours, 1 day, 2 days. We talk about 500 to 1,000 an hour per girl.
And I can make business sense.
Right. And that's like, you know, and then I came to the conclusion, I'm like, you know what, let me find someone. I bring the drugs, I bring the girl, or I just give it to the girl. I'm not even asking for money. I'm not even selling drugs. I'm saying, like, if you take this girl for a few hours, here, have it on top. If you want to pay for it, you want to have fun, you can pay for it. I just don't really care for the money. I don't mix it up. It's really good stuff. Like, I got it from a really good, close person. So now that came to, like, okay, people want to party. I kind of got the name. I have the good stuff, you know, with certain people. But again, I wouldn't give it just out. I just rather give it to you for free. Exactly, because of their purpose, right? And then he asked me, he's like, who is your person? Like, who is your, like, plug?
Dealer, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, well, most definitely not telling you because I can't tell nobody because it was definitely a link to, like, the Colombians that I had back then. And they trusted me. They know the money was always cool. And it was just an easy thing for them to do, right? So now he's like, oh, I need the contact. I'm like, I can't do it. First of all, I can't bring you in because they will never accept you. I got in because of someone that was close to me and they've been family for 20 years. That's how I got in. And it's just no way, right? And I can't, you know, I don't even want to take responsibility for it. So he kept, like, bugging me for it. And again, I didn't understand the law system or whatever the case was. And he convinced me to do one drop. And I said, you know what? I hook your friend up. Because he said, my friends just need something. I have to bring them something because then my clientele stops because I can't bring them anything. I'm like, okay. The guy wanted a lot of weight. And I'm like, I'm scared to get robbed because, you know, I'm 5'2". Like, I'm 155. I get robbed easily. I'm not going to fight for it. You know, I'm going to just have it. And then I can't stand, like, I can't pay the guys. I'm not doing all that. So we decided, I'm like, you know what? Just going to drop a half a kilo. It's a one-time favor. And that's it. I don't want anything to do with this because it's going a little far. But then again, I think, like, meh, half a kilo is not that bad. I can afford it myself. Who cares? You know, if I lose 20, 30 grand, eh. So I go to this sushi restaurant on the Upper East Side. It's, like, classy, nice. I have my little Louboutin shoes on, whatever. And it's right after Christmas. And I packed it up like a little gift, you know, the Coke. It was, like, really a half a kilo, like in a bottle of wine. It was not in the bottle. It was just the packaging. I go there. And I'm getting in, and the guy's sitting there. And at that point, he seems a little nervous. And I'm like, yeah, it's weird, because we already met before. It's a little weird now. I sit down. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, order something to drink. Like, we're here for a drink at least, if you don't eat, you know. And he's like, oh, I got the money. And the way he said it, he looked past me, because my back was to the door, right? He looked past me, and I just like the way he said it, why would you say I got the money? Like, louder than normal. I turn around and I just see the lights. And in that second, I turned back on him, and I was just like, I couldn't believe it. Like, this, just seconds, right? And you see the SWAT team is storming, you see the FBI, the DEA, NYPD, and they go and arrest him. And I'm just sitting there, and they go in, like, you know, everyone is laying on the floor in the whole restaurant. The Asian guy is like, you know, in shock. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm just getting off the chair and trying to walk outside. I'm just leaving everything. I want to get out. And then the guy is like, okay, like he came over to me, like one of the agents, and he's just putting me back on the chair. Not even violently, really, like, you know, easily put me down on the chair. And he's like, where you going? And I'm like, oh, I don't know this guy like that. This is the first day, and I'm out, you know? And then he's like, you know who you are, okay? He's like, you know who you are? I'm like, you gotta make, you have it mixed up, right? So I want to leave, and he's like walking with me, but really, like, in a way of like I said, he did it softly, but he put me on the floor and put handcuffs on, but not aggressively, I have to say that. And he grabs me back up, and he's just reading me my rights. And I know from CSI, someone reads you your rights. It's over. It's bad. It's the best time, right?
I didn't know much, but I knew that much.
But at that point, I still didn't get it, right? At that point, I still didn't get it. And I'm like, are they after him? Are they after me? What's going to happen, right? So I got into the car, and it was like all these cars outside. And then the guy's like, well, I got introduced you. This is the DA, FBI, da, da, da. And he's like, where do you live? And I'm like, I just made up an address in Harlem. Because we like, you know, I'm Upper East Side. I'm like, just, you know, he's like, let me repeat myself. He's like, this is who we are. And then he came up with pictures over 6 months, me with my dog, me and people I shouldn't be photographing. But there was no picture that was like incriminating, right? But just they were watching me. That's basically the point, right? So he's like, we know where you live.
God knows that feeling.
Right? Yeah, and I'm like, fuck, you know, I'm like, and then he's like, what were you doing there? I'm like, I don't know what I was doing. I was on a date, as I said, right? And he's like, oh, really? So you married and you have this and you all these things. And I was married at that time. I'm like, well, we're not on good terms. I'm still trying to talk myself out. And then he's like, we're going to your house right now. We know where your address is. And he's like, tell us the apartment number. I'm like, I don't know. I just didn't want to say anything because I'm like, every word I'm saying, I know it's going to be bad, right? Mm-hmm. Somehow, they went to the house. They blocked the whole block down, you know, and I was just outside and I just see how everyone came out of my apartment in handcuffs. I'm like, damn it. I bought another kilo just for the house. Just right before, right? And I'm like, damn it. Now it's bad, right? So about a five down.
I would say, yeah, this is bad. This is not a good situation right now. It's not looking great for you. Yeah.
But then I still was like kind of hoping, like, you know what, God, just give me something, you know. So anyway, they drive downtown to 17th Street and 10th Avenue, which is the DEA headquarters. By the way, I saw the El Chapo story. He was in the same place where I was with the same officer that walked me in there, was the same guy that was in there.
Some high caliber.
Yeah, it was like a backpack that I saw there on the news. So anyway, they put me in a cell. They brought all the people from my house in. There was just, it was two guys. And they were both like, oh, shit. You know, it was kind of bad. But they kind of comfort me, but you can't talk, right? So they take me out of the cell. And then you have this scenario of, like, good cop, bad cop. Like, obviously, the guy comes over, he's like, oh, you're 24. You're about to be 25. It was, like, 4 days before my 25th birthday. And he's like, you're about to do 25 years. And I'm like, how? And he's like, here, the amount of drugs you had, and it's like not even like cut up, so it's worse for you, right? And then the house stuff and all these things. So he's like, you have 12 counts of an A1 felony at that point. 12 counts of an A1 felony is pretty bad, because every felony, A1 felony, you get 8 to 25 years. If you have 12 of them, it's like...
Right.
Yeah.
And are those felonies, they're all drugs at this point they're charging you with, or have they also... delved into the business, or they haven't even got there yet?
The thing is, I don't even understand at that point, but they come up with possession, sale, attempted to sale, near the school district. Then they came up with that I had sex trafficking, kids trafficking, all these stuff. And I'm like, in the end of the day, all got dropped because it was bullshit, right? I mean, there was in America, when you get caught for something, they're going to try to make that story as big as possible mm-hmm. and talk with as much as possible you can. And it goes
hope that something sticks. Yeah.
Right. So if you don't have a good lawyer, you might, some stuff sticks because you can't prove it, you know, pretty bad. But at that point, I just knew it was serious because I see it even because the thing is this, my that time fiance, right? He was coming in and I just saw it in his face, like this shit is bad, you know, because he'd been locked up before. And I just thought he was trying to keep me like in a good spirit. But anyway, when I was sitting there, they're like, okay, right now you have two options. One is you're going to do a whole lot of time. And two is you let us know where you got the drugs from. And I'm like, I'm not choosing either option. I just want to sleep over it. It's like, oh, we don't care. We're going home and you're going to be here and all this stuff, right? So I'm like, you know, and they're like, so who was it? So they wanted me to say a name, just to say a name. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. So they said, are you signing right now a statement that everything from the house is yours? And I'm like, it's in my name. I either way get charged. We all get charged with it. But let me just take the raft at this point. First of all, it is my name. It was my me going there. It was me doing the sale. I take it. You know mm-hmm. what? I mean, it was kind of like a hard decision, but I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to pull other people into this, right?
So in your head at that point, by you signing that, that's you agree. You're like, you think you're staring down the barrel of like 25 years in prison.
Yeah, exactly. So I signed that statement. They let everyone go. And then they started processing me. And they said, you know what? We're just going to let you go to sleep for a little bit. And then they kept talking to me. They're like, you know what? You got to talk or you're not going to talk. So at one point they said, you know, we've given up. It gets rolled over to the state because I'm not going to do federal time. They're not looking for me. It was a setup. I'm not a drug kingpin, obviously, right? So they just want you to do the time. And the longer you stay in there, you're not interesting anymore to snitch because people know you're gone. People know you got arrested. People are going to talk. So if you're not there anymore in the streets, you're not valuable to them. So after 2 days, I got to downtown. And there you have the regular court proceedings, right? So you go to court for the first time. You get a lawyer appointed. Then they made me that first offer was 15 years. It wasn't even 25, but it was like 15. And a bail of 300,000. And they took all the pictures and stuff. And then I had one phone call for 60 seconds, right? So I called my that time fiance. I'm like, look, I don't know what's going on. He's like, hold on. You're about to go to Rikers Island. Let me give you some advice. Talk to nobody. Don't be friends with nobody. Don't fight nobody. If someone takes something from you, you better fight for it. And I'll come see you ASAP and get you a fucking lawyer. And I'm like, what is Rikers Island?
Maybe. Right, okay.
You know, maybe.
You hadn't seen...
never heard.
You hadn't seen Rikers Island on CSI. Right.
So then, you know, they chained me up. And even the chaining up. Now, again, I'm a tiny girl. And of course, I had done something illegal. I had my hands chained up, my legs chained up. There's a chain goes around everywhere, your neck, everything. And I'm in this little tiny thingy, but it chained up that again. And I'm like, it's not.
So you'd done, so in that like 2-3 days, you'd been in like kind of low, I don't know what they call it in America, like prison, like you've been in the cells at the police station.
Yeah. But it's not even the police station, like DEA. And then you go downtown, they have like different kind of cells there.
Okay.
It's like you're somewhere down in the.
So was that your first time in custody?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't.
But nothing for nothing serious. You know, I got arrested before for a misunderstanding. Really wasn't my fault. It came out, it wasn't my fault. And the second time it was in the DR. Wasn't my fault, but I'm not a snitch. Then once it was in France and once in Switzerland. But it was
interesting. Okay.
It was always like smoking weed or like, you know, being a teenager or like time.
So at this point, were you not that flustered? You were like pretty chilled. You've had 3 days in like kind of the local like police cells or whatever.
The thing is, you just don't know what's happening and you have no control over it. So it's just people trying to scare you. Like even when I got to Rikers Island, the lady, she's like, oh, your shoes, it's red bottom shoes, huh? Priscilla Boutin. Oh, they're going to be gone. What size is that?
So you're still wearing your Louboutins in Rikers Island. Could you not change it out?
Yeah, you get processed. They give you clothes that are way too big. Like, they pretty much fall off my ass. And it's
massive, right? I mean, it holds masses of...
Rikers Island?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, there is one part for women, the Rose M. Singer Center, and the rest is men. And the men, yes, massive. Women are, of course, less. Women are incarcerated, but it's still pretty big, yeah.
So now, they still separate you.
Yeah, they have to. They have to. I mean, if women and men are in the same area, if... You are on the same bus, you're going to be in a cell that day is pretty much you cannot talk, or, you know, it's like, but yeah, so basically they process you and then they look, okay, what did you do? And then they see my case. They're like, oh, you're going this way with all the crazy people that have crazy charges. You know, they want to kind of like separate them. So yeah, you first go there and you finally can shower. You get this little soap, state soap, and you just have to wash yourself with that. You get like the bare minimum, a toothbrush that's like this big and a comb that's this big, and it's all plastic.
So can you describe what the actual prison is like, what the building's like? So is it like big, like multi, like you'd see in the films, America says, like four floors or whatever, long corridors, cells all down one side?
They have different, like, how can I say, like floors, right? It's like almost like a swastika, if I can say that. It's horrible to say, but it's like different floors. And then you all have the same yard. And when you come into the prison like cells, you have like different floors. Yeah, that's true. But like, two. And then it's like, it depends which, every block is a little different, but it's usually it's like 60 to 70 people.
You know, on a block.
Locked in, or you in a dorm where you are with like at least 50 people and it's open.
Okay. But are you sharing a cell?
No.
Because you're in one of the dorms.
No, first I was in one of the single cells and then they kind of like said, okay, at a drug offense, you have to go to rehab. So they have like a rehab. It doesn't matter what you did. You have to go to rehab and you have to pretty much do anti-anger management. But when you have a drug case, you got to go to a different schooling because a lot of people there are drug addicts, right?
Right.
I'm trying to go with that way. I'm like, you know what? I'm a drug addict. Let me, I'm going to just go to rehab and maybe you can let me go. So I tried that and the judge is like, please stop talking. It's like... Not the one for you. So anyway, but I got moved and I got into a dorm. Now the dorm is the problem. People rob you. People will fight you. You don't have the cell that's closing, right?
How many people in a dorm?
About 50. It depends how full
50 people sleeping in one space.
Yes. And then of course they have their ways and stuff, and it's always officers there and stuff, but it's like they don't really get involved unless they see it's going a little bit too far, which I don't. What is going too far? The first day I went to shower, a girl got stepped up next to me and I just turned around. I'm like, I didn't see nothing because I can't. I don't want to. And nothing. Like, you know, it's just people are anxious, want to prove themselves, which is unnecessary. That's just how they do.
So what was the conviction that you eventually got? What did it all sort of, by the time... You came out of the court process. What was the conviction?
So you got to see you going back and forth with the court and you're trying to find the deal. So when I, the lucky thing I had was I was hiding money all kind of places like insurances and stuff. So I pulled that money out to get a decent lawyer because the lawyer is really everything you need in this. Like the lawyer that I had got for free there, she would have given me more time than even like, you know, possible. She really messed up in a lot of things. So I finally got some lawyers and there is the blessing in disguise a little bit. But they said, well, because you just moved, on the warrant that the judge gave, it's the wrong apartment number. So everything that was in the apartment got crossed out of my list. Now they found computers, phones. I wasn't a dummy in that. There was no names, nothing. Like you couldn't really charge me with it unless I tell you I did that, right? So I never talked. She's like, well, unless you guys have any type of like, people that come and point on her with that, but the phone is not in her name, the computer is not in her name, that is not hers, point blank. So now they turn this whole thing around, right? They still have the drugstore on top of me, the sale that's still there, you know, and it's a half a kilo, which is serious. So they said, look, you give us all the names of all your clients, all the governors, all the politicians, all the people we could have a use of, and we give you a deal.
And you had some quite famous clients, I imagine, by this point.
Right. And the good thing is in my phone, you know, I disguised them into different names and stuff. But in the end of the day, I wasn't willing to talk. I told them, you know what? I'm not about to talk about this stuff. And then I just saw they had less and less evidence. So in the end of the day, through my own connections and stuff, I finally got a deal because there is a certain time that they're going to listen to you. At one point, they're just going to say, okay, it's a minimum time of this. And I didn't want to miss that passage because when you not going to go through that, because they can't do nothing with you. They don't care to lock you up for, I don't know how much years, you know? So in the end of the day, I got a deal for 4 years, which was a decent deal, but only if I would deport myself after two and never come back.
Right. So you've not had to give up any names at this stage?
No.
And this is purely based on, so you're looking quite good here because you whittled them down from 25 to four, which really means two.
Okay, but the 25 was a complete lie. The 25, I found out later, yes, it says it like that. But let's say I come into the United States with 2 tons of cocaine. Then I get the 25 years, but not if I have a half a kilo and a kilo. It just wouldn't make sense from the amount, right? But technically they could, but then they have to see, okay, how many offenses you had? Number four. You didn't have this offense. Like, you know, they have to be still going by the protocol. So they just threatened me with 25 years, which on the paper it says that, but it's not necessarily. So the first choice was 15 years. Now everything from the house is already gone. Now my lawyers start to cleaning up. They're like, you know what? This is bullshit. Do you have proof of this? No, you don't have proof. So it starts to come down a whole lot, but it's still stuck. So what I just did, I had some favors open from people I know, higher places. And I'm like, you know, I need a favor. And obviously they kind of like returned and I was open to sign it just to leave the country. And again, if you nonviolent, you have a nonviolent case, you can deport yourself after 2 years because the Switzerland and the US have this agreement. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just do the 2 years.
And so, sorry, just to go back, the convictions that you finally receive, are they limited to drugs?
Yes, sealed.
They were limited. So they didn't actually do you for any of the business that you were running?
There was no proof at all. Years. And again, even they found that in my house, I can say I didn't place it there. Now you don't even have a warrant for my house. So what are you going to do, Dutch? So they even sent Vice. Vice is like specialized in that kind of prostitution, whatever. And they even said, look, for them, it's more important, is there any underage girls? There was never an underage girl. No one ever came forward and made a complaint against me. So it's like the case was so unstable, you know, like they said, you know what, we let it go.
But they would. Right. So here's the thing. But they were asking you for, they wanted the names of your clients.
Right.
Like you said, like governors and stuff. But why do you think that was? Is that for them to be able to use for their own purposes? So
because it's money, right? Let's say you have some governor or some really high politician or just someone with a lot of power. It doesn't matter to be a politician, and you have something against them. What do you think you can get? You can get whatever you want. And I don't know exactly how that business works, but I just see, like, in the United States, it's all about people ratting out other people to get forward. And somehow they make money with it, with the system. What exactly do you want to get out of it? I mean, a lot of people got smoked out in the media. You know, oh, this person went to the this and this, but not really governors, politician.
Did you have to be careful with that? I mean, presumably, did you have a lot of like high ranking officials, celebrities that kind of used your services?
Yes.
So
celebrities is the wrong way. I mean, some, but I would say more like people in power.
Okay. Any names you want to share on here? You didn't.
Rob, I mean, I'm not sure your persuasion techniques are going to match.
I had to try.
That's the whole. Like, listen, I appreciate it. At the same time, I feel like if someone pays for a service like that, there's no names on my site. Well, you can use your imagination.
And so part of the deal to be deported, presumably, you know, it's not just as simple as leaving your apartment. For you, that was giving up your whole business that you'd spent 4 years building up.
Mm-hmm.
So was that a hard decision or was that deal sort of
and your husband, fiancé, I guess, as well? How did that work?
My husband and I wasn't together at that time, so it wasn't. But I was engaged to a potential new husband. but it was definitely hard. But you got to see this. Let's say I didn't take that deal and I do all this time. I come out knowing the United States, being on parole. Still, actually, even the courts would not even let me stay there because I wasn't married. And for all the charges that I had. On top, let's say, okay, I was able to stay. You can't get work. The whole system is messed up. They want you to come back. It's just, why would I do that to myself?
So it was a clear decision to say, I'll return to Switzerland. And
Yeah. But at the same time, I did have to go to court and I just defended myself. And it was kind of funny because it was a really cool judge. it's not like in a huge, you know, it was like more like a personal, like little thingy. Then he asked me, like, what is the reason? Why should you stay in the United States? And I said, first of all, I bring people a good time. So and it's like, so out of charity, which is true. I didn't hurt nobody. You know, I didn't hurt nobody physically or in any type of way. Yes, it's illegal. I get that. And I did a lot of, I put a lot of money into charity. And this was the crazy part of me as well that I told the judge. I'm like, you know, one thing is, even I did illegal things. Just right before I got arrested, I put a big amount of money into the Sandy hurricane relief.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of kids and, you know, all these things. And they took that money back out and put it into the state because it was illegal money. You know, leave that.
Wow. That's interesting.
You know, it's just, but that's America, you know, because they all take that money and where does it go exactly? But anyway, the judge left. He's like, you know what? Unfortunately, everything above 30 grams of weed you're selling, you're out. <He's> like, look at your charge. So I took that and that's it, you know. But I knew it, so I knew already. But I just, yeah, anyway, have to go to court and make your peace, I guess, with them or sign.
So what are the like top differences between your experience in custody in Switzerland and your experience in New York?
Well, even like Switzerland or let's say most of Europe, it was a different type of charge. You know, I was a teenager doing something stupid and they just want to like wake you up a little bit and just go over there. But they are just, I never felt, I was never scared.
Mm-hmm.
My dad or my mom, right, to be mad. But not scared. Like in the States, what I felt like is like, they take everything from you. They lock you into a cell. You cannot make any phone calls. No one can come to see you. They decide when you eat, when you shower, or when you even get back out or not. And that's a little bit of scary part. It's not just the time, it's are you coming out alive? And I felt that when I went to the maximum security upstate, I had to do a school test. Now, Switzerland, they don't have that on their little chart. It's only for Americans, right? So I had to be truthful. And I asked, and they're like, oh, okay, so you didn't do any school here in the States. You have to cross that. Then they still do a test. And of course, schools in Switzerland, we are way ahead the Americans. And even the IQ test that I did, and they felt like I was cheating. So they threw me into the hole, like the solitary confinement. And there was no, nothing, like you just, you did something wrong, you're in there. And they forgot to feed me for a day. When you, they finally found you, they like, you just, you have nothing and you have no control over nothing. You just wait for you to feed you, give you toilet paper. Even us as women, if I can say that way, when we have our period, you have to beg just to get a pad and you only get one. And you have to deal with that for as long as, it's just the little things in life, right? That turns and you only have one Bible. You have roaches, birds, like whatever it is, you have to just be there and you cannot get out. There's no way you're getting out for like a long time. And they're not telling you when or how. You can't get anything. So that was a little bit scary. But at the same time, I had my waking moment there. It was a night. I was already in there for a minute. And I think I was like left of like 43 kilos. I was extremely skinny because, again, they don't feed you all the time. You know, when you get this, maybe sometimes you get food, sometimes you don't. I had this very tiny window because I was a little bit below ground. And I saw the moon. And it was like the first time was like a full moon. And I said to myself, if I ever get out of here, I will do everything right. Right, right. Like there will never be a moment someone can lock me up for something I really actually did. but it's just, I will do the best and I will do the most. And it kind of gave me like energy. So I started working out, started reading the Bible, started writing stuff just to be with myself in like doing something. Because if you don't do anything, you fall into depression. You're tired all the time. You wake up, you don't even know what day it is. You don't know if you missed food or not. And you start to not care anymore. Anymore, did you shower or not? And I didn't want to fall into that. And then I called for medical because they always do some sort of stuff because they want to give you some sort of medication, they want to do surgery on you for every little thing so they make money. It's just a money making
right
place.
Okay,
I took my teeth out to get money. It's no way,
it's the opposite in the UK. They do everything they can to delay your medical treatment, and not that they're meant to, but that's the experience, yeah.
Yeah, so then I went to medical. There was this guy. He just came fresh out of Iraq. Like a lot of people that come out of the war from their soldiers, they can go work for the prison and they have like a pretty decent pay, I guess. And you know, they work for the government. And this guy asked me questions which certain I have to answer, but certain I didn't, and I didn't want to. And I was being a little brat, but I didn't say anything. I just laughed at him. And he got mad. And I knew he got mad. When I saw he got mad, I'm like, let me get him worse. You know, let me get him madder. So I get a reaction, right? But I didn't say anything to insult him, because you can't insult, you know, these officers. So I was in medical, and then he swung on me. He punched me, and I fell off the thingy, and I was in cuffs. And I'm like, yes, camera, hit me, you know what I'm saying? Beat me up. I'm going to get a lawsuit, plus I'm going to go home. Because that's really like, if you have them in your hand, you can say, listen, I'm going to go home. You give me all this money. That was just my thought in that second, to get out of this goddamn mm-hmm. stuff. And he kept beating on me until his friend came. He's like, stop, there's a camera, right? So I'm like, yeah, well, now they're going to make sure, because they work together. It unfortunately, mm-hmm. horrible. I'm not saying every officer is bad. I'm sure these officers, they do the right thing. But most of them, they do kind of like, you know, work together. So then he's like, whenever I see you, I will cut your face, because they want to do the Joker face on these girls, which is pretty bad. Inmates yeah. to each other, but even officers, they know then that means basically you're a snitch, right? And right. then you go down, and they just do that to random people, that just that you have a hard time. And so I remember he came a few days later to my cell in the middle of the night. He had no business being there, because I had a lady that was doing the rounds. But he has the ability to open the cell. And then he came in. He's like, now, you know, I'm gonna cut you. He kept saying that. And I was like, you know, I was screaming. So the lady moved her ass. Thankfully, she came down. She said, what's going on? I'm like, he's like, oh, I thought she wasn't breathing. Because they could just come to check if you're still breathing, if you're alive, right? And I'm like, no, he came in here and wanted to cut me. And she's like, what are you doing? She already had issues with him, right? Which was my luck. So she actually reported it. And they didn't report him directly, but they moved me to Albion, which is all the way in the north, close by Canada. They moved me to, that was like medium, maximum security, but it was just a fresh start for me to go in there, right? So I wasn't in the hole. I come in there and I was able to go to school, work, and then you get your points together, because you have to do all these courses that you even get released a little bit earlier. And that was like my goal, you know? Mm. So I got into that block, and it was like, again, an open block, which means there's not single cells. It's like a dorm. You have your little thingy that's, you know, your little cube, I guess, but it's not closed. It's not locked, you mm-hmm. know? But there again, I was like in the worst block that is possible, you know, like where people not want to leave jail. They're just going to stay there, you know? They want to do stupid stuff. And they always lock like down our block because of fights. People doing stupid shit. Like even the superintendent came down. He's like, I have never seen, I can't even call you humans, you're animals. Like he would be, and I'm not even involved in these kind of things, but it's the block I'm in. So it is what it is. But I formed some friendships there. Going back, you make $12 a month. With that, you buy shampoo, all these things, and food that's already old.
Are you work? So you said you were doing school and stuff, but were you working? Did you have like jobs? Like, say in England here, we have like, they make like...
They had a couple of girly girls, because you know there's a lot of girls, they're not so girly girls, they're more like dykes. So they picked certain girls out, they thought, you know, they're pretty or whatever, and we had to clean their toilets, so, and their offices. But it was not even that bad, because you kind of get sympathy points when you're there, you know, in case something is going down, they're not trying to, you know, they know who's trouble and who's not. You know, some people, they always start trouble. But that way, you make 15 cents an hour, yeah. In school, I just had to finish school, which was for me. I mean, high school diploma over there is like sixth grade in Switzerland. It's a job. Everything is a job. And that was like my, you know, but I had it done. Like I had this crossed off my list. So I can go further into the next program, you know, anti-aggressive, like, which is all, I'm not even violent. So why am I doing it? Yeah. But, you know, maybe learn something. Who cares? But I met some girls there, and we all, even like ladies that were there for like drinking, like you had two glasses of wine, you got into an accident, and now you're doing 2 years, you know, stupid stuff. Then some people, they have worse things in there, but we had this little nice group of people that want to, you know, go somewhere, we work out together, we, you know, we're trying to move forward. Well, we all had no money, which means from Europe you can't send money. At one point, you know, your friends don't really think about you anymore, which I'm not trying to point fingers or anything, it's just, it's normal, life goes on, and you're not there. You know, they're not going to think of you all the time. So basically for the shampoo and all these things, that would take up the $12 a month, just the regular stuff you need for like taking care of yourself. Mm. Even food would be really tight, you know. So I started doing eyebrows, feet, here.
Here comes the businesswoman again. We're back in the game.
All right, but no, this is the thing. My friend's foot got broken. She got 5 more fumes a day. So she was cheeking the pills. What that means is you get the pills, she was cheeking it, and then we would sell it. But we had a whole organization. We had the yard ready. We had every block ready. And everyone will get for 2 pills, 2 at 1 pack of cigarette. With that, it's 10 cigarettes a person. With that, you can buy food. So we had a whole organization. When someone would snitch, we already had the next person taking the pills. So it worked out great. I mean, in the end, I had, there was one officer. She's like, everything you get, you have to like put on a list that you get properly, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you don't have nobody. But I had a lot of people when they leave, they would say, you know what, keep my Walkman, keep my tape, because only Walkman and tape that you can get in there. Or take my hair dryer, because there's no hair dryer or anything like that, or just a brush. So I would have some stuff together after a mm-hmm. while. You know, I've been hustling for a whole year.
Yeah.
And again, I don't rob nobody. I don't do that kind of stuff. So there was one lady, she's an officer. Every time she came in, she's like, oh, we're going to raid you now. We're going to get you, right? So she came down there. She's like, all the stuff that's in your locker doesn't belong to you. It's, how do you call this again?
Like contraband or?
Contraband, exactly. So she calls down the superintendent, not the superintendent, but the white shirt. The white shirt is not the sheriff, I think, yeah. But anyway, the captain. He comes down and he's a guy. I know I work for my cleanest toilet, right? And he's been very cool. So he's like, okay, I'm gonna check the thing. So he looks at my pictures. He's like, oh, that's a cute dress and whatever. So he's like, do me a favor, do all that stuff far back in your locker and just don't cause any trouble anymore. And the lady got mad. She's like, no, that's not on her list. But I got a little extra points, right? So I was lucky. But again, they knew me. I wasn't someone malicious who robs people. But then again, if it comes down to it and someone puts their hands on me, I had to fight back, which is not my way of like teaching people or being like that way. Mm-hmm. But if you don't fight back, you're just going to go down. It's going to be bad.
But you emerged unscathed. So
physically, maybe not emotionally.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. How long were you in prison for in total, from your kind of when you were locked up in arrested in New York to when you got deported, when you flew home?
Close to 19 months, because I got the good time when I did the school test and I did all the complimented the thing, and then when I finished that, basically ICE was ready to pick me up, which was pretty quick, you know, because you have to wait until they pick you up, the ones that deport you, then you're there another like week or two, but they can hold you up to 2 years. But
okay,
with one of the state officials here.
Of course you are. I need some of your friend's techniques. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, but you know, it was really sad because I saw people in there. There wasn't even criminals. It's just illegal immigrants, right? Mm-hmm.
They've been held for
Mexico. He can lock you up in there for about 2 years. And then they drop you off by the border and you have to walk. I mean, it's just not humanized. And that's mm-hmm. when it comes to the United States and that whole immigration thing, and when Trump made more detention centers, understand what it is in there is worse than solitary confinement. When it comes to food, when it comes to like, you get a toast that is green, that's how old it is. And you get, I had an apple that I had to like, you know what, in 3 days I eat 4 bites and then 5 bites. And then just the whole thing, you can't go outside, you're just locked in. And now imagine, you didn't do anything illegal. You're in there for 2 years.
Yeah.
That's bad, isn't it?
Nieves, I think we could ask you questions all night about your experience there, but I'm quite keen to move on just because you've also got some interesting future plans and you have to tell people where they can find out even more. So I'm not trying to cut your story short, but I'm just conscious that there's more to say. So tell us, I believe you've already mentioned you've got a book.
Right. I got a book. It's called The International Madam. It's available on Barnes & Noble, Walmart, and Amazon.com and other dots. And I am in the, let's say, beginning stage of doing a documentary and a movie and a second book. But it's still like planning in that sense, but it just takes a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But I'm very happy with my team. I have a website. It's called www.theinternationalmadam.com. On there, you can find all the information on me. Then social media, it would be Instagram @IntelMadam. That's I-N-T-L, MADAME in the end.
And what we'll do, we'll put all of that stuff, we'll share that on ours, so all the guys listening to ours can just, they'll be able to find it through our Instagram as well. So check that out.
So we should be able to see your story on the big screen soon, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the plan I have.
And will you be returning to your actress roots? Will you be starring as yourself, or are you going to hire someone else in?
Who would you? Yeah, this is good because we've got our two questions we ask everyone, but we're going to add a third one here. Who would you want to play you in the film?
I think Ariana Grande. Reason is,
okay,
I need the younger myself because I was 20. Angelina Jolie. And I think she's cute. She has like a little bit the same frame. And why not? I could see her as that. But maybe there's possibilities, right? But I'm definitely not going to be in the movie. I feel like I just want to tell my story the best way possible and professional as possible. Not a good actress.
Well, you're doing something right, aren't you? You're convincing people of something. So,
and as Claire said, I'm convinced. We could have stayed on here for another hour again.
Definitely.
But it was, brilliant. So, but to finish up, Nivez, we do have the two questions that we ask all of our guests. So the first one is, if money was no object, red tape no issue, what one change would you make to the criminal justice system?
I think snitching. I feel like if you mess up, go do your time. You shouldn't be setting up other people. That's just something that I feel like that should be changed.
So in terms of like plea bargains that are allowed, is that what you mean? Is then you don't think people should be able to
cut a deal?
What's the difference? Okay, let's say me and you rob a bank and they both know it was us. And one of them says, well, but she was with me or that person was with me. It's already obvious. But if I go out and tell someone, please bring this bag over there, like just like I got set up, basically, I've never gone there and sold a half a kilo, right? Then you're setting me up. And that is something I feel like I wasn't involved in your other stuff. Go do your time and don't set other people up. That don't even do anything. I mean, in the sense of like selling, you know, whatever they do, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, good. And then our last question is, if you had to go back to prison for a year, which hopefully you won't, who would be your dream cellmate?
Oh, that's a hard one, right? So as far as my information was to like understand and just get further, I would say Martha Stewart because she's been in prison.
Good one, yeah.
She'd know the ropes.
Friend, because at the same time, in prison is about surviving and just evolving a little bit. So someone that has experience would be a good idea.
Well, Nivez, thank you so much for sharing
a hell
of a story with us. I have no doubt we're going to see and hear from you at some point again in the future. And as we said, everyone check out, we're going to put all the details of your book and everything like that on our Instagram. But Nivez, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Nice to chat to you. Take care.
I love to come back. So continue the conversation or whatever. I'm here.
Amazing. Awesome. Thank you, Nivez. It was great to meet you.
Great to talk to you. Have a good one.
Bye.
Wow. That was genuinely really interesting. Like, no banter. I'm actually devoured with you, Rob, for letting me down and pying me off like that.
You have to run to the cinema to watch her film when it comes out.
I'm going to have to.
You're going to have to fully back up. I mean, yeah, I think we got a taste for that there, didn't we? I mean, I think, you got the impression. She does give me a good run for the money in the talking stakes. We probably could have gone for a couple more hours there. But yeah, what a lady. She's so interesting. So likable, I thought, though, as well.
Yeah, thank you, Nivez. That was great.
So moving on to our weekly question for you, our loyal listeners. This week, we had a little poll on our Instagram stories and we asked you, Claire actually arranged this one. So you put a very nice quote on there from, who do I want to say, George Washington?
Benjamin Franklin, but it's Benjamin not actually Franklin. Originally from Benjamin Franklin, but I thought it tied in quite nice with the theme of what Coddy was talking about last week in terms of being a miscarriage of justice.
Exactly. And we wanted to know from you guys about whether you thought you wanted a legal system where you risked a guilty person going free, but where you did not risk locking up innocent people. And overwhelmingly, I think it came out 89% in favour of a system whereby, you didn't lock up innocent people and therefore risked
guilty people walking free, which I think is a really interesting debate, because I think, yeah, you know, Quaddy's case highlights that perfectly about what you see so much of this kind of, especially in cases with juries. And I guess, Claire, you'll know a bit more about this on the legal side, but I guess that's it. We do have this kind of, we touched on it, I think, in one of the previous episodes, where we have this kind of imperfect system, especially when you have a jury system where you've got 12 people who have maybe no idea about legalities and are very much humans. And we make our minds up very quickly about this kind of stuff sometimes. And, you know, you then get this situation where you get people innocent spending often long, long periods of time in prison, which seems a bit mad, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I think our system is designed to reduce that, because our burden of proof is that we have to prove that someone did something beyond reasonable doubt. So that would suggest that we're trying to eliminate that. But as you say, it's a risk of a jury system, really, and us not having to know the basis upon which the jury make their decision.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone who participated in the poll. Boats's question is going to be this week, so
and he's got promised
a couple of days to think about it.
He's promised us a piece to camera. He's going to be kind of asked personally asking the question down the lens to you.
So. There's not a chance. There's no chance.
Keep an eye out for that.
He'll send you a text, Rob, and ask you to use your exactly. Instagram magic.
Yeah, so get ready for my face appearing.
I'll ask Rob to do the video.
Well, maybe that'll make up for me pieing you off for the Nivez episode. So
yeah, he does owe you one. He does owe you one. So yeah, please do participate. Follow us on Instagram, use the code BANGEDUP25 with Redemption Roasters in store and online, and share the podcast. Thank you.
And feel free to leave us a review like B-109 did. Not my words. This is B-109. This is such a good podcast. The hosts are very likable and work really well together. So anything like that, feel free to drop that onto our reviews.
Thank you, guys.
See you next time.
Cheers,
bye.
Guys. See you next week. Bye.